Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
It is the Awful Announcing Podcast, and it is good to be back post-Super Bowl. Ben Heisler with you. I will be joined by my good friend Andrew Buchholz, the outstanding writer over at awfulannouncing.com. Not necessarily a roundtable edition, not a whole lot of other faces besides the two of us, but Andrew is outstanding. He's really well-versed, and there's a lot to go over. So I'm looking forward to getting his perspective on everything that happened post-Super Bowl, both from the game, from the week itself. So always a lot of fun talking to him. But before we get to him, I should mention that the Awful Announcing Podcast is presented by our friends at BetDSI.com. I want to tell you a story really quickly about my experiences so far with them, because when I found out that they were going to be the new sponsor of the Awful Announcing Podcast, I was very excited. You follow a lot of the times in my other career from the fantasy angle, and sports wagering is a big part of it. And so I had some questions, and naturally I was playing a lot of the props from the Super Bowl. I was getting caught up in everything that was going on. Obviously one of the highest bet days of the year, if not the most highest bet days of the year. And it was actually really good customer experience, because I was following up on some of my prop bets, and one of them was I took the under for Rams tight end Tyler Higbee. I think it was like 22.5. I know you guys are all fascinated by this, but the reason I bring this up is because it was initially refunded, and he did play, but they made a mistake that said that he didn't play. So I called them up. There was a chat feature that is built right into BetDSI, and I said, hey, I think you guys might have made a mistake. And sure enough, right from the get-go, they said, we apologize. Let's totally go ahead and rectify the situation. And sure enough, my under bet paid out right away. But they were amazing to work with, and a lot of the times when you're in these types of spots, it's a lot more difficult. So highly recommend it at BetDSI.com. They literally have everything from college basketball to NFL to NHL basketball and beyond. It is a wonderful place to be able to get in. They even have some politics, reality TV bets. They are the top rated site on all the betting review sites with a really easy interface, great mobile site as well. And for Awful Announcing Podcast listeners, this is you guys. You sat through all of this, so this is really the part that rewards you. You guys get a 100% bonus match when you go to BetDSI.com. Use the promo code AWFUL100. That's AWFUL100. So if you go say you deposited $100, they will match that 100. So it's a great time to get in. There's a lot of good college basketball and NBA and NHL ahead. Plenty going on at BetDSI.com. So remember, promo code AWFUL100 at BetDSI.com. Remember, it's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI.com. Andrew Buchholz is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Buchholz, B-U-C-H-O-L-T-Z. Happy post-Super Bowl to you, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Ben. And I think from your Tyler Higbee discussion there, you're more qualified to talk about NFL tight ends than Stephen A. Smith is. I mean, he probably would have bet on Hunter Henry. So.
Yes, it's true. Although if Hunter Henry was in the game, I probably would have taken the under as well. But that's good. Yeah, I got one thing on Stephen A. Smith's salary not being one of them. This was, at least from the outskirts, a terrible Super Bowl. But let's sort of start with what CBS could control, because I think a lot of people from the outside looking in were really excited about this particular matchup, and certainly with the broadcast team. Tony Romo, the last couple weeks, especially coming off the AFC Championship game where he was predicting all the different plays that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were running from the offensive side down the stretch. There was a lot of positive momentum for CBS. And I'm wondering initially, putting the ratings aside, do you think they should be happy with ultimately what they were able to control from the entire broadcast production?
Yeah, I think a lot of their broadcast actually went quite well. I think Jim Nance and Tony Romo did a very good job on the call. I think one thing that was really appreciated from my perspective was they recognized what was going on with the game. They weren't trying to give people a hard sell. There were times where they're like, oh, what a great punt. We broke the punting record. And like, like they were very aware of what the discussion around this game was like online and how people thought about it. And I really appreciated that they weren't giving people the hard sell for something that would have been pretty difficult to sell. I thought from a pure call perspective, Nance and Roma were the best commentators on this in a while, I thought. I mean, Buck and Aikman have been fine. Michaels and Collinsworth have been fine. But I thought Nance and Roma were actually better. There was more energy there. I think Romo brings a nice fresh energy to it. He brings a different perspective than we've seen from a lot of these guys over the years, and they generally did very well. I think from the production side, CBS generally did very well. A lot of it was quite smooth. They didn't probably get as much use out of their fancy cameras, and especially the end zone ones, as right. they would have hoped for, because there wasn't a lot of action around the end zones. But it generally worked pretty well. The two things that did come up were where the period where Romo's mic cut off, but for a couple of plays. But even that, I thought they handled quite well. It wasn't even obvious that they'd lost his mic until he came back on and said something about it, because on the first play, they threw down to Tracy Wolfson, and on the second one, it seemed like it might just be a spot where the analyst just let the game speak for itself. And then Romo handled it with a funny joke at his own expense, and it was fine. And you do get those sort of technical difficulties. The one thing that probably was a low in terms of the broadcast was the post game, and where you had Tracy Wolfson in that scrum trying to interview Tom Brady, and he keeps going and hugging other people first, and then there's just this huge press of people around her, and we wrote about this. It was a fully very weird 2.5 minutes or so of people wondering, are you okay? What's going on with this crush of people? But I don't know that there's a lot that CBS can necessarily do about that. I think a lot of that is, A, it's what Brady wants to do in that situation, and B, it strikes me as an NFL issue and a venue issue of just letting that many media around Brady when they're trying to do the rights holder TV interview. So I think that was probably the low point for the broadcast from a technical standpoint, but it's not necessarily right in CBS's control.
That's a really interesting point, because I think there's sort of two parts to look at that. The first is that what can the NFL or the television networks really do? Because they have a responsibility to try and get these interviews and to get this sound from these players at the most opportune times. And maybe it's not necessarily opportune for everybody around them or for the broadcast itself, but I think for viewers, right after the game is probably one of the most authentic times that you will hear from a player. You know, locker room, they've had a chance to cool down. I remember this in covering, you know, the Chiefs and the Royals for several years here in Kansas City, is that if you can talk to a player immediately after the game, you know that the reaction is going to be much more authentic and transparent. So I think if the NFL does decide to make a change, I worry at what expense it could potentially come to. The other thing, and this is something that I heard from an interview in Chicago earlier today when they were talking about this, was maybe in essence, even though it kind of felt awkward and a little bit chaotic for Tracy Wolfson, I think viewers also kind of got they got a look into a situation where something was very raw. Like the idea of this massive scrum, they got sort of taken in behind the scenes. And even though it felt maybe a little bit uncomfortable, I think sometimes viewers sort of appreciate those moments later on. Like, man, did you see how insane the entire post-game scene was? Do you think that was part of the conversation as well?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I think it got much more discussion for that weirdness leading up to it than for the actual interview. I mean, the actual interview, Brady didn't really say anything notable. He said pretty much what you expect from an athlete in that spot. So, I mean, yeah, and it's a bit of an interesting look behind the scenes and a look at what it's like in that moment. But the thing I would say, though, is I do think that this was avoidable for the NFL, and that they could have found a way to make that less awkward and less chaotic than it seemed. I don't have experience being on the Super Bowl field after the game, but I've covered a whole lot of CFL Grey Cups, and they're very clear after the game that the TV rights holder gets it first. They get their interviews. They get their interview with the MVP first. They grab certain people first, and then they're turned over to the rest of the scrum of the media that's on the field. And for me, it was really interesting to see this and see that the NFL didn't seem to have that in place and just seemed to have it as much more of a free-for-all, because in most things, the NFL is much more controlling than the CFL.
I want to bring up one other thing that you said about the actual broadcasters themselves. Mm-hmm. We obviously have heard the discussion and the narrative surrounding Tony Romo over his first 2 years in the broadcast booth. But Jim Nance is a known name. He's a known commodity. You kind of know exactly what you're going to get from him. But, you know, the sort of the saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, it kind of feels like Nance is a little bit more amped up for these games now that he's with Romo. And I'm wondering if that's something that you've noticed as well.
I definitely have. I think Nance is much more entertaining to listen to and much more interesting to listen to working with Romo than he was with Phil Simms. And I think, in a lot of ways, that's not even really Nance's fault. I think a lot of the time, the play-by-play announcer really has to be on the same page as the color analyst, and they have to be setting them up. They have to be sort of, not necessarily in agreement with them all the time, but they have to find a way to let the analyst make the points that they want to make. And with Phil Simms, especially in the last few years, a lot of those were sort of curmudgeonly, I've seen it all before, this is the way it should be points. And so even if Nance didn't necessarily share those views, he had to sort of set Simms up for those moments. He had to go towards that view of thing from Simms. I think with Romo, it's very different in that Romo brings a very different perspective. He brings a fresh energy. He brings a new approach to a lot of this. And whether or not that's closer to what Jim Nance actually thinks, we don't really know, but we know that Nance, in setting Romo up, is going towards that aspect more. And I think that makes Jim Nance much better.
So let's get to the ratings component of the Super Bowl. And obviously the news came out that over the last four consecutive Super Bowls, the television ratings and the overnight ratings have steadily declined. Now, CBS came out with a press release today saying that, yes, their numbers were very good, particularly on the digital side, that it set digital viewership records, averaging 2.6 million viewers per minute. They also mentioned that they set new records for subscriber signups and time spent on CBS All Access. We know how CBS is trying to put it all into perspective, but when we are looking at it collectively, do we still feel like that there were the most amount of eyeballs were still on the Super Bowl? Or is it more of a reflection of CBS is trying to save face here?
Yeah, I mean, I think CBS is emphasizing the digital because that's the only good story for them out of this. And it is a good story. I mean, it's a good story that the streaming is going up, that they're seeing better numbers there. The particularly good story for them is the CBS All Access signups, if at least even a fraction of those people stick around. And that's something that's really interesting with this, is that this is a Super Bowl where CBS has a additional paid product that they can sell and that they can get people on. That's something that hasn't happened with NBC and Fox over the last couple of years. So there's more of a direct path for them to monetize streaming, not necessarily for this game because all those people signed up on a free trial, but there's a path for them to monetize the streaming long-term. And I think that was shown even in their own promos that they ran during the game, bumping things like the upcoming Jordan Peele Twilight Zone and being like, you're going to have CBS All Access.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, there's a legitimate story there that the streaming is good for them. Now, I mean, there were still some technical issues with the streaming, and we covered that, and particularly with it going down for a bunch of people late in the game, and that speaks to streaming as a technology, but the streaming story is good for them. The rest of the ratings are not good for them. The rest of the ratings are the lowest since 2009, the lowest since 2008, if you only include the linear TV numbers. And that's very problematic, especially considering that it's the reverse of the trend we saw this year. We saw the NFL ratings for the regular season rebound about 5%. We saw the conference championship ratings just go up by huge numbers, up 10% for the NFC, up 21% for the AFC. Mm-hmm. And so seeing that trend reverse itself in the Super Bowl and drop down from what was already a low Super Bowl last year, the lowest since 2009, that's not a good story. So, I mean, I think CBS is doing all they can here by emphasizing the streaming numbers, but that's about the only good story for them.
That's perfectly fair. And again, I think the digital numbers maybe matter a little bit more than people would lead on, especially with different trends changing in how we as viewers consume media and television these days. I think in general, it always felt like the television numbers starting to decline a little bit. So, but you're right, though. The NFL also made it a point this year for their numbers to go up. And granted, it was a lot of from this incredible young quarterback play from high-octane offenses. And I'm pretty certain that if this game was like what people had expected, with it was going to be an over under around 56.5, if it was 21 all heading into the fourth quarter, I think we'd be maybe having a very different discussion today.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's one reason why this isn't the NFL is dying. There isn't enough evidence to prove that at this moment. This was the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. It was the lowest halftime score in the Super Bowl in 44 years. And so I don't know how much you can really get out of a general viewership trend when this is such an outlier compared to everything else we've seen in the last 10 years. But the one other thing I should mention on the streaming front, though, is that not all of the 2.6 million average manned audience there, not all of that is CBS. That's folding absolutely everything in. They folded in the Verizon mobile numbers on AOL, on Yahoo. They folded in the numbers from the NFL's own properties. They're folding in just like CBS.com access in addition to the CBS app. So it's interesting to keep in mind that, like, even with all of this stuff folded in, this was still way below what we've seen in recent years.
I know people expected a competitive game, but I don't know if necessarily people expected a lot of the buildup, because it kind of felt like throughout the week, it didn't feel like a lot of juice for this game. It didn't feel like it was going to be a matchup that people were having a lot of conversations about. The narrative surrounding the Patriots is kind of the same over the last several times they've been in the Super Bowl. And yes, for the Rams, it sort of focused more on the coach as opposed to the actual players and the guys on the field. You also still had, you know, the New Orleans situation where people were talking about the Saints' loss and Sean Payton wearing a Roger Goodell clown shirt and Goodell's lack of reaction to the story until his press conference midway through the week. So did it feel like this game leading up had a lot of the juice worthy of the buzz that could eventually lead to these ratings?
Yeah, I think the NFL got several unlucky breaks from a matchup standpoint. I think the biggest one was how that Rams-Saints game ended and the weeks of controversy that followed from that. And a lot of that was self-inflicted. The NFL held it incredibly poorly. They didn't address the situation until a court.
Who would have thought that the NFL would be its worst enemy? Like, I never saw that
coming. Yeah, so I mean, a lot of that dragging out as long as it did and gained as much play as it did came from the NFL's own reaction, but that's still an incredibly poor break for them, and it put a lot of the focus around the game on a team that wasn't even playing there. I mean, even today, we were writing about how the New Orleans ratings just tanked, going from 7th overall in markets last year to dead last, 56th in the metered markets this year, thanks to the Saints fans boycotting it. And so, I mean, that's a huge story. One of the biggest stories of Super Bowl week is not about the game, and it's about people saying, don't watch the game.
Right.
That's a big problem. Beyond that, from the matchup standpoint, I think that it would have been easier to sell as either Tom Brady versus Drew Brees, the old veterans trying to get another Super Bowl, or as Jared Goff versus Patrick Mahomes, these exciting young quarterbacks who are the future of the NFL.
And you already had a game in the hundreds from that Monday Night Football game earlier this year.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, the NFL doesn't control its matchups. There's nothing it can do about that. But I do feel that either of those alternative possibilities would have given them more favorable narratives heading into Super Bowl week and created more buzz around it. And in particular, the way that Saints game ended really just totally overshadowed a lot of this and meant a lot of people weren't interested in this Super Bowl.
Last thing on this from me, just sort of from your own personal perspective, what do you think would have been the most ideal matchup for the NFL in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know that I have an actual answer to it. I mean, I think it might have been Chiefs and Rams. I mean, I think that could have been interesting. I think that would have been the easiest sell to neutral fans. I think hey, neither of these teams has won a Super Bowl in a while. They're both really exciting. They both got these great offenses, these young quarterbacks. They're doing things we haven't seen before. This is the future of the NFL. Now, I mean, Kansas City isn't the largest market out there or anything, but I think that would have been an easier sell from the neutral standpoint than because there's a lot of neutral fans who are really tired of the Patriots at this point.
I think the general fans and the public wanted Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl very badly, considering the year he had, considering the MVP award the night before the Super Bowl. I'm with you there. I think they would have gotten numbers regardless of whether it would have been the Rams or the Saints. Certainly the rematch element would have been a lot of fun against the Rams and even against the Saints too. It's still another very exciting offense against a bad defense. So you basically could guarantee all throughout the season that when you were playing the Chiefs, points were going to be scored on both sides. So it was fun to be able to sort of experience that locally and then have it be projected during the AFC playoffs as well. One other thing that sort of perked my interest as we continue on here on the Awful Announcing podcast was this seems to be this ongoing, I don't want to necessarily call it a feud, but there's this back and forth right now between the NFL and Barstool Sports, and the fact that, you know, shockingly that Barstool is in a situation where they're in a bit of controversy, both either for them or against them. But it sounds like, you know, they were supposedly trying to get into Super Bowl media night parties and then a post-game party, and sounded like the NFL kind of didn't want anything to do with them. To me, this feels like a win-win for both sides. Yeah, the Barstool guys didn't get to go and experience the fun of being at the party, but man, if they know one thing, they know how to get themselves in the middle of a story, and they know how to generate publicity. And then from the NFL, yeah, they know that they're going to get backlash from it from like the Barstool Army or whatever, but they don't have to have Barstool in their event if they don't want them to. So do you think that sort of both sides ended up winning out here?
Well, I think Barstool won. I think from first off, Dave Portnoy and Pro Football Talk commenter getting kicked out of the media night thing. I think that got them way more attention and way more hype than they would have ever got if the NFL had just let them be there and let them ask their dumb questions, even if they'd faked their credentials to get in. I think they got some sympathy even out of it of, hey, why is the Big Bad Football League picking on this website?
Right.
And it really fires up their fan base and makes their fan base even more, oh, Goodell sucks. And then I think that got even worse for the NFL with how they handled it at the Super Bowl, because at the Super Bowl itself, it's not even them using media credentials or anything. It's Dave Portnoy buying a seat or being given a seat like every other fan, and they're going to send security guys in, and in a way that leads to a video of them dragging him up the stairs.
Right.
Like, again, I mean, this is an incredible thing for Barstool. Like, this is fantastic for Barstool that they're getting all this attention and all this coverage from this of the guys the NFL hates so much, right? And, like, really, in a lot of cases, a site sort of the level that they're at would only be a little blip on the NFL's radar if they played by the book. But they do all these crazy things and all these crazy stunts, and they've turned themselves into like a rival of the NFL, a feud with the NFL, and this only really helps them. I think it's another, in my opinion, it's a way that the NFL has shot themselves in the foot again. And again, it's because, like, I mean, what's the downside for the NFL of letting these guys do their thing? They ask some questions at media night. I mean, even the official NFL recap of media night included a couple of the Barstool questions. So, I mean, clearly they're not that far from all the other weirdness that goes on at that event. And then having them at the game, like, nobody other than them is noticing that Dave Portnoy is at the game cheering, right? Like, he's a fan, he's doing fan stuff, his Twitter people are loving it, but, like, he's not causing any disruption to the overall game, and there, if the NFL just leaves him alone, there's no story there. So I feel like the NFL's handling of it really made it a huge win for Barstool and was another thing that made the league look bad.
By the way, if you guys want more coverage from the Super Bowl, Awful Announcing has a ton of articles, including the 10 best commercials that Sean Keeley wrote about. Andrew has some great articles as well. Really just wall-to-wall coverage from all the different angles that you could expect from Super Bowl 53. I'll end the show on this note, because now that the Super Bowl is over and we got to wait some time until March Madness comes along, I'm curious if there's anything sort of on your radar for the rest of February in the sports media world that either A, you have your eyes on, or you're curious to see how it ultimately plays out. Is there something that stands out to you? I know the Daytona 500 is coming up in a little bit. Is that part of it? What really do you have on your radar at this point?
Yeah, I think Daytona is certainly going to be interesting. I think Fox is putting a fair bit of effort into marketing that, and a fair bit of effort into marketing their motorsports coverage, which is notable. But the other thing I think that's really interesting, and not from a scale perspective, it's going to be tiny from a scale perspective, but I'm really curious to see how this Alliance of American Football actually goes when it gets off the ground next week. And I mean, they've got the first game on CBS proper. They got the championship game on CBS proper. All the ones in the middle are going to be on CBS SN, but I'm really curious to see if there is actually any audience for this on TV, if people actually go to the games, if the games are actually any good. And there's a whole lot of questions about it. There's a whole lot of reasons it may not work at all, but if all of it somehow aligns, I mean, maybe this does become an off-season football league that at least lasts for a few years.
American Alliance of Football, just as soon as the Super Bowl concludes, and if anything, maybe a terrible Super Bowl will whet the appetite for fans to try and get some better football, at least on their radar. We'll see ultimately how it plays out. Make sure you guys are following Andrew on Twitter, at Andrew Buchholz, and of course be following Awful Announcing as well, at Awful Announcing. Always appreciate the time, man. It's a lot of fun, and we will talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot for having me, Ben.
Thank you guys for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast, the small roundtable edition. We will be back in a couple weeks or so. Make sure you guys are subscribed. Please do rate and review the podcast as well. And thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.